Welcome to this place of respect where all are held with dignity. Welcome to this place of love where all are valued for their diversity. Welcome to this place of faith where all are honored for their journey. Come and be welcome. Let us worship here together. Please take a minute to say hello or to introduce yourself to the people around you this morning.
May the light of this chalice shine in our hearts and help us to create a world where all are valued and respected. Please stand as you are willing and able and join me in our first hymn, number 348, Guide My Feet. Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. At LCUUC, we strive to surround this community with the spirit of love in everything we do. My name is Paul Fackler, and I'm the worship associate for this morning's service. As a welcoming congregation, we hope that all visitors, wherever they are on life's journey and whatever their backgrounds, will find a lasting home here. Whether you're warmed by wood-burning stove, steam heat, electric fireplace, baskets of kittens, thoughts of Arizona or Hawaii, or just by the fellowship of those who dare to go out in the snow, we welcome you. No matter who you love or which pronouns you use to describe yourself, you are welcome here. Please join us for refreshments and conversation in our social hall after the service, and while you're there, stop by the welcome table to find out more about LCUUC. Today's order of service includes announcements of upcoming church activities, and we look forward to all our visitors, friends, and members joining in. Please take a moment at this point in the service to silence all electronics you may have here with you today. And again, welcome to all here this morning. We're so pleased that you have chosen to celebrate and worship with us.
One of the ways that we try to take care of our greater community is by contributing to the local food pantries, both financially and by collecting actual food items, non-perishable of course, to donate each month. If you have food items to share, please bring them forward at this point of the service, or have a child bring them forward for you, and I invite the children to stay up front and enjoy a story. Well, good morning. I don't know if you guys are anything like I was when I was growing up, but when I was in school, I always had a couple of friends that thought they were funny when they weren't. They liked to play bad jokes, trick other people, and in general were kind of mean until somebody finally said something to them. So this morning's story is about a dolphin that likes to play very bad tricks. And this is Dar the Dolphin's Dirty Trick by Margot Fallis. Dar the Dolphin lived in the waters of the Red Sea, and it was beautiful. He was a happy and playful dolphin, but he was also kind of rotten. He loved to play tricks on everything else that lived under the sea with him. One day, Anissa the octopus was sorting out her yarn. She had 8 different colors on her 8 different legs, and it had taken her a long time to untangle them. He snuck into her cave, swam right up behind her, and yelled, "Boo!" as loud as he could. She was so scared, she dropped everything, and it fell in a big, messy pile. She swam back to the back of the cave to hide before she realized who it was. He laughed and laughed. All her yarn was a big mess. And she said, "You'll be sorry for this one day. Someday you're going to be in big trouble and I won't even help you." Another time, Dar swam into an oyster bed. All the oysters were sleeping and letting their pearls grow. He snuck in, pried up every oyster, and switched all their pearls. He put the wrong ones in all the wrong places, and when he finished, he swam behind something to wait. When the first oyster woke up and checked his pearl, it wasn't his. The second one did the same, and soon they were all awake and angry. Each one of them thought their own was bigger and better. Dar couldn't stand it anymore. He started laughing and pointing. All the oysters looked at him angrily and said, "One day these tricks are going to get you in trouble." He just laughed and pointed more and more, and then he swam away. One day he was swimming along, thinking of all the funny tricks he played on others, when he spotted the hermit crab, Habib, sitting on a large rock and reading a book. He swam around, found a piece of fishing line, bit off some, and then tied the line to Habib's shell from the back where Habib couldn't see. Then he swam around in front of him. "What are you reading?" he asked. "It's a book," Habib said. "Go away, you're bothering me." The dolphin said, "Nope, I'm not going anywhere, and you can't make me." Well, the crab was so angry, he said, "You are such a pest, I'll show you." And he started to chase Dar off. But when he jumped down from his rock, the fishing line yanked his shell right off his back. Dar laughed hysterically. Habib, the crab, was naked in the middle of the ocean. Habib looked back and said, "How am I ever going to get that back on? I am too old for this, and you are rotten. One of these days, you're going to be in big trouble, and nobody's going to help you." He was madder than anything Dar had ever seen, but it was also funny because he was naked. He started to laugh and laugh, but as Habib swam away, he realized, hey, he's really mad at me. And it didn't seem that funny anymore, but he didn't apologize or even try to help. He just swam away. The rest of the day, he was worse than ever. He drew a bullseye on the starfish. He put a clothespin on the eel's tail while he was sleeping. He even put pink dye into the squid's ink. Everybody was mad at Dar. He kept swimming along and thinking about how funny he was, and he didn't see the net right in front of him. He swam right into it, and his fins and flippers got caught, and he started to struggle, and the more he wiggled, the more he got tangled. He started to yell, "Somebody help me, I'm stuck! I'm stuck in a fishing net, help!" The oysters looked up and saw that it was Dar and went, "Huh, serves you right." "Leave him in there," one of them said. The octopus had just untangled her yarn again and had it all organized. She heard him crying and said, "I am not coming to help. You deserve this." The eel, the starfish, and the squid all heard him crying, but they didn't care either. They were too busy trying to get the pink ink off of everything. Habib the crab had just gotten his shell back on when he heard him crying. "What has that rotten dolphin done now?" he said. "I warned him. I'm not going to help him." The dolphin was getting pretty scared. "Somebody help me, please. I promise I won't play tricks anymore." Habib couldn't do it. He felt guilty. And he swam over to Dar as he was hanging in the net and said, "I'll give you another chance. Do you promise no more tricks? I don't want to be naked in the middle of the ocean ever again." "I promise," the dolphin said. "It wasn't funny." "Well, you were rotten, but you're trying, so I'll help." He swam around the net and took his sharp claws and snipped it and freed the dolphin. They swam away together, and the dolphin said, "I'm sorry, no more tricks. I promise. Thank you." "Now go and apologize to everyone else," the crab said. Dar agreed, and he spent the rest of the day apologizing. He helped the octopus with her yarn and helped clean the pink ink off the squid. He erased the bullseye from the starfish and took the clothespin off the eel and apologized to everyone. And everyone forgave him. But boy, they didn't ever think those tricks were funny. Thank you for taking the time today to listen to my story. Can I have my lantern bearer? Would you all please help me in singing the children out? It's all the kids except the high schoolers. It had been a very long day at the gates of heaven, and St. Peter was getting tired. He was glad to see there were only three people left waiting to get in. The first one came up, and St. Peter hurriedly tried to think of some questions and said, "Okay, what's your religion?" He said, "Well, I was a Catholic." Peter Page, through his thick book, read something and asked desperately, "So did you go to church and receive some sacraments?" The guy said, "Oh, yeah." And St. Peter let him in. The next man approached, and St. Peter asked what his religion is. "I'm Jewish," the man said. St. Peter again flipped through desperately, read something, and said, "So, did you study the Torah?" The guy responds, "Oh, yeah. Sure, come on in. Come on. It's getting late. Come on in." The last woman approached, and when she tells St. Peter that she is a Unitarian Universalist, St. Peter again flips through his book desperately, looks up and says, "So, did you bring a hot dish to share, and is the container recyclable?" In order that we might continue to share with one another, the morning offering will now be given and received. Our thanks for these gifts given and received for the life and the work of this community. This is the time in our service where we share our joys and our concerns. And we do this in two ways, by speaking them aloud and by lighting candles together. Would anyone who has a joy or concern to share please raise your hand and the ushers will bring you a microphone. And I'd actually like to light the first one today for a concern for my dear friend Diane Allington, who entered hospice yesterday.
Good morning, I'm Terry. In December, on the second Friday of the month, Tony and I came here for the Kirtan chanting and drumming, and it's coming up again this coming Friday, the 10th. It is so amazing. It's just, I don't even know how to describe it, so try
joyous.
It.
Joyous.
Joyous. It was fabulous. And so I just encourage people to try it out and see how they feel afterwards.
My name is Jim. If you would light a candle of joy for member Barbara Begale, who is healing rapidly from her most recent knee replacement.
Hi, my name is Barb. Please light a candle of concern for a dear friend who recently had a gallbladder surgery, but she's just been in greater and greater misery, and the doctors don't know what's going on, so that's thoughts of healing for her.
My name is Chris, and a dear friend of ours, Chris Praney Morgan, is on her way for a journey to change her life. She's going to have her foot amputated this week. And I'd like to light a candle of joy because I know this is something that she really ultimately needs to bring her life back to where it needs to be. And a candle of concern to hope that her surgery goes well. And joys and concerns to her family also.
Hi, I'm Mary. I just want to light a candle of joy. A dear friend of mine's daughter, 10 years ago here in Milwaukee, had a major health emergency and had really her entire intestines and stomach had to be removed. And she really wasn't expected to live beyond age about 3. And they moved to France, and we visit where she's from. And we visited them this Christmas and celebrated Prisca's 12th birthday. So it was just wonderful.
And we light the last candle today for all of those joys and all of those concerns which we hold deeply, but which have not been named here today.
Our first reading today is a blog post called Still Not Asking For It by blogger Leora Kay. Leora writes, "Women fear rape. In fact, women fear rape so much that on average, most women take at least 25 steps a day to prevent themselves from being raped. We live in a world of an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. The cure, in this case, of course, is living with the trauma and repercussions of rape for the rest of our lives. Many of us will be raped. Most of us who are raped will be raped by someone known to us and trusted by us. Boyfriends, bosses, friends, friends of friends, and yes, popular, well-adjusted athletes with promising futures. These rapes happen at work, at home, at parties, in classrooms, and any other location you can probably conceivably think of. Even with these facts, we are still taught to believe that we have a higher chance of being raped in a dark alley by a strange man who we don't know than by people who we believe we can trust. This pervasive myth is so entrenched in the way that society approaches the subject of rape that it immediately directs the focus away from the rape itself, the violence and psychology of control, etc., and onto an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. We do not want to be this victim. We are so horrified and so frightened that we would rather place the blame on her. We want to believe that we can will ourselves not to be raped, that we can outthink the statistics, that by some magical combination of never doing what we are not supposed to do and knowing what we are supposed to do, we cannot end up like her. That because we are so careful and know all the rules, this can't happen to us. We do not want to believe that this will happen to 1 in 4 of us, regardless of the actions we take. We want to believe that we are above the statistics. There are, of course, other factors: patriarchy, rape culture, slut shaming, pure ignorance, disbelief, denial, puritanical culture, and sexism all play a major role in how we as a culture handle ourselves in the aftermath of rape. But this fear does too. We see it on social media, television, and articles. Nothing enrages me more than women saying that other women asked to be raped. I personally find it impossible to ignore, and I know others do too. We torture ourselves by reading it and try to make a difference by responding to it, writing articles, making video responses, and sharing. If fear, instilled in us by an omnipresent myth that is pushed on us day in and day out, is the cause, what is the cure? We as individuals can only do so much by ourselves, but even those small things add up to big results. Educate your friends and family of the truth about rape. Do not accept excuses like boys will be boys or an ounce of prevention. Work to promote safety in your community. Volunteer at a rape crisis center. Listen to a friend who confides in you. Reach out to news sources that promote rape culture and let them know what you think. Promote yes means yes instead of mutely accepting she was asking for it. We all have the power to be catalysts for change. We have the tools. We have the know-how. We can do it. Here ends the first reading.
Would you all please join me in a few moments of silent thought, meditation, or the spirit of prayer?
From writer Doris Lessing comes this reading from the Golden Notebook. Ideally, what should be said to every child repeatedly throughout his or her school life is something like this. You are in the process of being indoctrinated. We have not yet evolved a system of education that is not a system of indoctrination. We are sorry, but it is the best we can do. What you are being taught here is an amalgam of current prejudice and choices of this particular culture. The slightest look at history will show how impermanent these must be. You are being taught by people who have been able to accommodate themselves to a regime of thought laid down by their predecessors. It is a self-perpetuating system. Those of you who are more robust and individual than others will be encouraged to leave and find ways of educating yourself, educating your own judgments. Those that stay must remember always and all the time that they are being molded and patterned to fit into the narrow and particular needs of this particular society. Here ends the second reading. Would you please stand as you are willing and able and join me in singing hymn number 311, Let It Be a Dance.
In January of last year, a picture of a female rape protester was suddenly everywhere on the internet. And the picture showed a pretty young woman wearing no shirt, with a very low cut, very tiny skirt, with the words "still not asking for it" written across her bare torso in black marker. She stood with her fist raised like this above her head. A male viewer of this picture commented publicly on the site, but then again, it's kind of like putting a meat suit on and telling a shark not to eat you. The website owner, who's also male, on the site where he posted this, posted a brilliant and pointed reply. I have removed the profanity. "We men are not sharks. We're not rabid animals living off of pure instinct. We're capable of rational thinking and understanding. Just because someone is cooking food doesn't mean that you are entitled to eat it. Just because a banker is counting money doesn't mean that you are being given free money. Just because a person is naked doesn't mean that you are entitled to have sex with them. You are not entitled to someone else's body just because it's exposed. What is so difficult about this concept?" Indeed, what is so very, very difficult about this concept? What is difficult is that we live in a rape culture. And the bulk of this is going to be directed at a female victim with a male perpetrator, because that is far and away the statistic that we see. This is not to say that there are not male victims who suffer in their own way just as incredibly. Culture is such a nice sounding word. It can have connotations of patronage of the arts, or a feel of sophistication, such as I myself am wont to display. If we have culture, or we are cultured, we have risen above those basic levels of civilization. Culture, however, is much more than that. The dictionary says it's also these two things. It's a behavior that depends upon the capacity for learning and transmitting knowledge to succeeding generations. And it's also the customary beliefs, social forms, and material traits of a racial, religious, or social group. The features of everyday existence, way of life shared by people in a place or time. So popular culture, southern culture. Our behaviors for sharing knowledge with our succeeding generations. Culture is the fire in which we burn. It's the air we breathe. It is all around us, the point that we don't even see it anymore. So why all of a sudden, because we didn't hear this 10 years ago, why now? Why are we hearing that we are a rape culture? Is this a new thing? Has something changed? Are we really, and how do we change it? Rape culture is a concept used to describe a way of life in which rape and sexual violence are common, and in which prevalent attitudes, norms, practices, and media normalize, excuse, tolerate, or even condone rape. Before 1974, I wouldn't have been able to even use that word on this pulpit. We just didn't talk about it. In 1974, the term rape culture was used in the first book on the issue, which was Rape, a Source Book for Women. It included first-person accounts. In that book, the New York radical feminist stated that our ultimate goal is to eliminate rape, and that goal can't be achieved without a revolutionary transformation in our society. Admittedly, things have changed since 1974, and not always in ways we can control or understand. We've traditionally talked about rape as an act of power, oppression, domination, and control rather than sex, and this is still very much true. But why now does it hit the news every few weeks? We're barraged with stories of teachers sleeping with middle and high school students. I'd be scared to ask how many people in this room have read 50 Shades of Grey. I know I did. But it's a book about sexually powered dysfunctional relationships, distorted love. It's not even about healthy B&D, S&M, or any other practice. It's distorted. It made the New York Times bestseller list and is considered a romance. They're making a movie out of it. I'm sure it'll be a great date movie. In August of 2012, a drunken, unconscious 16-year-old West Virginia girl was raped at a party by two teenage boys, both football players in the Steubenville, Ohio high school team. The boys not only didn't hide what they were doing, they took pictures, video, and they texted them to friends live. Their arrest absolutely shocked them and their friends. The convictions rocked the town, tore it into fighting factions. CNN coverage mentioned how the boys' lives had been ruined. These promising young athletes. How could we do this to them? Laurie Anderson, author of the book Speak, which tells the story of a fictional teenage rape victim, is afraid that young boys often don't even understand what rape actually is, and some of the young girls are in this category too. On her website, there's a discussion board, which I actually participate in, where real teachers talk about students' reactions to this book. One middle school teacher from California posted at great length about her shock, sickness, and dismay as she realized that the gifted eighth graders that she taught, now these are not dumb children, very bright children, gifted eighth graders couldn't understand why Steubenville was rape. No clue. They knew that if the victim said no, it was rape. That was obvious to them. But no one had said no in Steubenville. She was unconscious. They didn't get it. When she explained to them that rape wasn't just forced sexual contact after no, rape was sexual contact that happened when somebody didn't say yes, the young people in her class were horrified. Two of the boys approached her after the class to ask about specific events that they themselves had participated in, which in both cases were rape. They were not even aware that what they had done was illegal, immoral, unethical. By creating a fiction of stranger danger or the rapist as some faceless dark shadow taking out his anger on a random victim, the U.S. has otherized and monsterized rapists in a way that is not true. Now, I'm not saying they don't exist. Absolutely. There are people out there with deep mental illness, rage issues. It happens. But one in four women and one in six men will experience sexual assault. So I want you to think about those numbers for a minute. look at the size group we have in this room, and you think about what those numbers mean. Most of their attackers will have been someone they knew. And in some cases, the rapist will not even realize that what he did was rape. This is rape culture. Professor Steven Landsberg is an economic instructor at the University of Rochester. He was Professor of the Year a few years ago. And in March of last year, his public blog, his public presence, said this: "Let's suppose that you or I or someone we love or someone we care about from afar is raped while unconscious in such a way that it causes no direct physical harm, no injury, no pregnancy, no disease. Despite the lack of physical damage, we are shocked, appalled, and horrified at the thought of being treated this way and suffer deep trauma as a result. Ought the law discourage such acts of rape? Should they be illegal?" A few paragraphs later, he goes on with his idea. "As long as I'm safely unconscious and therefore shielded from the cost of the assault, why shouldn't the rest of the world, or more specifically my attacker, be allowed to reap the benefits?" This is a man who taught several hundred college students, multiple classes. Two students complained about this blog. Not 30, not 60, not all of them. Two women found this offensive and went to the school. This is rape culture. How can we uphold the worth and dignity of each individual if they are a commodity which exists so that others can reap the benefits? Male or female, it doesn't matter. Where is the compassion and the peace, the respect for connection? Our media commercial culture doesn't help much. Some of you may remember the sexist and often misogynistic commercials of the 50s, which showed things like a woman being spanked by her husband for giving him stale coffee. Anybody remember that one? I know I do. Still in magazines when I grew up. Another wife was in awe of a ketchup bottle, which, and I quote, "even a woman can open." Today we have modern day portrayals of men as endearingly stupid, lazy, animalistic, aggressive. I bet quite a few of you have seen the yogurt commercial in which a bumbling and almost idiotic husband overhears his wife talking about her diet, including apple turnover, Boston cream pie, chocolate, strawberry. We watch as he sneaks behind her back into the refrigerator for all the good things that she has kept him from gorging on, blindly ignoring the Yoplait yogurt containers that she's actually referring to. Because we all know men are too stupid to be allowed access to the food. Pizza and cleaning supply commercials. Husbands and their friends nearly destroy a room. How many have we seen of these? They're surprised when their wife or girlfriend is upset. Tostitos spots, where businessmen stuff snacks in their faces while the female member of the team works and then high-five one another as she finishes the project, yelling, "Go team," while she rolls her eyes. What about Lynx and Axe body spray? They are geared toward people unable to function independently. And recent fast food commercials have included men ramming one another at the drive-through window because they cannot wait for food. Men unable to share. Men taking one another and their girlfriends' food and drinks because they can't control themselves. No one bases their life off commercials, and I'm not saying that, but they reflect what amuses us, what charms us, what calls to us. They're insidious. They're a mirror and that reflection is ugly. The web itself furthers the problem. Social networks make lives open books. People are growing up in a world of continuous connection, check-ins, bombardment with information from around the world, and quite a bit of that furthers the devaluation of others, or casting others as a benefit to be reaped as we watch for fun. Just while researching this sermon, I found literally, and I do mean this very literally, hundreds of thousands of websites dedicated to pranks, tricks, fails, something typically done by younger men and women and filmed for immediate net posting. You want to know some of the funny tricks I saw? Feeding someone a ghost chili on their pizza without warning them, and then laughing hysterically while they scream in pain and throw up. I saw this one not once or twice, but a couple of hundred times. Pranks like flipping over somebody's bed to wake them up, launching them face first into a wall. Pranks like covering a passed out young man's face with black permanent marker drawings of penises and obscenities at a party celebrating his wedding the next day. Pranks like locking a steel bike lock around a young man's neck while he slept, knowing he had to get up for his first professional job in the morning. They left it on him and went. These are not done to enemies. These are what you do to your friends. Friends who the college professor I mentioned might say are there for us to reap the benefits. Rape culture, a culture where others, men and women, are there to provide us with something. They somehow owe us amusement, sex, validation, entertainment. Among those under 30, women seem to suffer most from the sexual expectations, while young men are beaten, battered, and demeaned by vicious assaults masquerading as tricks. So as you use, what do we do? How do we dismantle a culture where others exist for enjoyment, regardless of the damage? Because that's what underlays all this. When people are no longer people, when they are something for us to get a benefit from. We start at the grassroots, doing what we do best. We talk and we teach, we live our values, we call for transformation. But it begins with talking. Talk to your friends, to your children, to your grandchildren. When you talk about things like Steubenville, make sure people understand what rape is. It isn't just that she did she say no. It's that she didn't say yes, or he didn't say yes. Ask if they agree with this. Ask how they feel about it. Why do they think that's funny on a fail site? Talk about using others for personal gratification or entertainment. Explain why any act at all that uses another person's body in ways they do not enjoy for someone else's entertainment is wrong. Talk to your kids and grandkids about bullying and pranking. Find out what they think is funny and what they find dismaying. Get out and see what's out there. Find out why your friends laugh at what they laugh at. When products or services are sold to you using objectionable commercials that violate your beliefs about humanity, you don't have to boycott the product. We probably wouldn't have anything to eat or drink. But take 5 minutes, send an email to the company. Let them know that you're buying in spite of the commercial, not because of it, that you didn't find it funny. And talk to others about why you feel the way you do. We can't dismantle our culture by doing what we are doing. We're trying to teach women how not to be raped, and it doesn't work. This supposes that rapists are all strangers in dark alleys, and it says that women are responsible for preventing rape. During Occupy Wall Street, several sexual assaults of protesters occurred, and in response, Occupy Wall Street built a 16-square-foot safe house. It was a good thing. But getting men not to rape women is a better starting point. Can you imagine heterosexual men having to set up a safe space so that they can protest without being attacked by LGBTQ folk and women? We all grin because it sounds so ridiculous. Can you see a bunch of 30 strapping grown men in a 16 square foot safe space? Really? Women need safe spaces because we live in a culture that makes sexual occupancy permissible anywhere. Occupy rape culture while occupying Wall Street. That's what they started to say, because doing otherwise is like throwing women to the lions and trying to teach them not to be eaten. My favorite and maybe the most gentle reminder of how this all works came from a Michigan mother named Magda, who demonstrated how to talk to very young men in an open letter she wrote to her sons, who were 8 and 11. And the end of the letter ends like this. This letter is almost over, but the next part is super important. Not everyone you know has been taught all the stuff we talk about. You're going to know people, maybe even be friends with people, who think it's okay to hurt other people in a lot of ways. One of those ways is sex. I know you're going to hear other boys say things about girls, or sometimes other boys, that means they don't care about those people's feelings or bodies. And when you hear that, I need you to step in. All you have to do is say something like, "Dude, that's not cool," or something that lets the person know that they've said something nasty and it's not okay. Remember that everyone wants to fit in. If you can take control of the mood in the room by letting them know it isn't okay, they'll stop so they don't look like an idiot. Remember how we talk all the time about how we're the people who help, who fix things when there's a problem or someone's in trouble? You may get a chance to do that someday, because those boys who say nasty things about girls or other boys may actually do something to them. And if you're ever anywhere where boys start hurting someone or touching them in any way they don't want, you need to step in. If he or she's asleep or drunk or passed out or drugged and can't say no, you need to step in. Remember, it's not good unless both people can say they want it. And if the person isn't saying anything, that doesn't mean yes. If they aren't saying specifically yes, then it's wrong. She continues to tell them how to safely step forward, even if they hate the girl or boy being attacked, even if the child's been mean to them, that they can stand up for them and still hate them again tomorrow. We can destroy rape culture. We can talk with the younger generation. We can talk with our own. We can make it not okay to think this is funny or sexy. We can create a culture where treating people as things isn't acceptable, and where we talk about these things. We can make it clear that men are not bumbling, mindless animals, and women are not meat suits to be thrown to the sharks. Live your values. Share them as you journey. Refuse to join in a culture where doing otherwise is accepted. When enough of us stand together in fighting for dignity and worth for everyone, we become the majority and we change the world. Amen.
We extinguish this chalice and know that the warmth of this community and the light of our sharing will be with us until we meet again. Please stand as you are willing and able and join me in singing hymn number 109 as we come marching, marching. Christy will play through it once before we start singing.
We go out today knowing that we can make a difference. We can challenge ignorance and oppression, provide hope where there is only hopelessness, and we can change the world. Peace, and may it be so.